hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast. Just before we get into this particular show, which is going to be very exciting, I have to say, I'm rather looking forward to listening to this one myself. I want to say thank you very much indeed to John Piper, who has donated in order to keep the podcast going. I can't emphasize enough how valued these donations are. As I said before, the hosting and the bandwidth costs are increasing, which is all good news because it means there are more of you out there listening to the podcast, but the costs do go up. If you'd like to make a donation to keep the show running, then please go to dadsarmypodcast.com and click on a donate button. Now, where did I put Oliver? Oliver, are you around? Oliver! Oliver!
Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Dad's Army podcast. We're back. We've got all kinds of fantastic news to share with you. Some wonderful footage that James has got from the Dad's Army weekend in Thetford. So sit down, relax, get a nice cup of tea or a glass of your favourite beverage and enjoy the Dad's Army podcast.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on?
Hello, hello. Yes, wonderful to be back. Hello, Oliver.
Hello, James. It's nice to see you again.
It feels like an absolute age since we've done any kind of recording.
It's been far too long. It has. And it's really, really good to be back behind the mic.
Well, we've got some fantastic stuff coming up for you, I would imagine, over the next half an hour, 45 minutes or so. Do you know, I always say that, and I never know how long the podcast actually is going to last I've finished editing.
I think it's always a wonderful treat if people get an extra 5 or 10 minutes. Especially in an episode which is going to feature some wonderful voices. And we're not talking about ours.
Well, this time round we're going to be bringing you the recordings that I made at the Dad's Army weekend, which, well, thinking back now, it seems like some time ago. It was, I think, the 20th and 21st of June, and it was slightly different this year, purely because Thetford Town Council took a fairly active role in organising some of the events and celebrations and so on that were going on over the weekend. But the most prominent event that got a lot of national media coverage as well was the unveiling of the Captain Mannerin statue. So we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. And we also got some recordings from me live on stage in front of over 200 people interviewing Jimmy Perry and also Harold Snowd and Michael Knowles.
No pressure, Vermin. And we'll also be hearing comments from over the weekend from Frank Williams, Pamela Kandel, Bill Pertwee introducing the statue. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with your host, James.
Let's start with the very first day. That was the Saturday. The statue unveiling had been advertised all over the place, and there was loads and loads of people there. And I think there would have been even more had the weather been a little bit more as it was when David Croft used to film in Thetford.
Yes.
Because it was windy, it was rainy, it was quite horrible at times, unfortunately. David Croft was actually there, so it's the first time that I'm aware of that David Croft has been in Thetford for an event and the weather has let everybody down.
Oh, no.
But it didn't compromise the event. I hadn't seen the statue at all. I'd actually got there the Friday night, so I'd been to see the little spot where, you know, the statue was going to be. And it was in a very large box.
Right.
It was in one of these wooden kind of packing crates with a tarpaulin over it and lots of security.
Wow.
So it was really, you know, quite a thing.
Did it have number 3 patrol keeping guard on it?
It didn't have anybody there. He actually had a couple of tourists there who were trying to figure out what it was, I think. Let's start. After everybody had gathered and all of the stars had arrived who needed to be there, the event was introduced by Stuart Wright, who I believe featured in your DVD.
Yes, Stuart did feature in Dad's Army and Beyond. He's absolutely lovely chap. He's a Thetford Town Councillor and a Dad's Army expert. Really, really nice guy. So we're going to hear from him unveiling Captain Mannering's statue, as well as Thetford's mayor, and also David Croft. And we'll just warn you in advance, the audio on David, David speaks rather quietly, but we didn't want to cut him out. We wanted you to hear what he had to say. So here it is. Enjoy.
Delighted to welcome you to Thetford on this happy occasion. Unfortunately, cross weather has let us down, I think, a little today, but hopefully we'll see a bit more later. Following the statue unveiling, as I said earlier, the parade will leave this car park and make its way over the Town Bridge and up King Street. We're joined today by the creator of Dad's Army, David Croft, and many others who are involved or related to those connected with the show. But before we go on, I'd like to ask the Mayor of Thetford, Councillor Mrs. Pauline Quadling, to say a few words of welcome. Pauline.
Welcome all of you. There's so many of you. It's fantastic. Absolutely. Such a warm welcome to Thetford. Or is it Warmington-on-Sea? I'd like to say that hello to Jimmy and to David. Welcome them. Welcome you all to stand here in this weather. But I've been told to keep it short because you've been standing around a lot enough and you want to get to look at everything else that's around. But one thing I would like to say is to thank, if we can do a big round of applause for everybody, everybody, the cast, everybody who has set this all up. It's taken so much time and all the rest of it. So if we can give them all a big round of applause, please. I'm not going to keep you no longer. I'll pass you back to Stuart. Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline. Bearing in mind the inclement weather, I will shorten my speech and leave that till the last bit. So I'd like to call upon David now to cut our ribbon and come forward and unveil the statue. But before, did you want to have a quick word, David?
It's very nice to be here and to be in within sight of the Bell Hotel. Arthur was a regular customer here. I always remember him. He's very particular about his early morning tea. He only wanted tea with one bag. And I remember him on one occasion with his tea, and he charged along the passage here to see the girl who delivered it and said, "You've done it again, haven't you? You gave me two bags." I'm sure he'll have a nice welcome expression on his face when we unveil it. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen a picture. It's a marvellous idea to have it here. So, what do I cut?
We want you to cut this and walk forward, please, David.
I'll miss your thumb.
That's it. No thumb. Lovely. Thank you.
And then there was a little break, and Bill Pertwee, well, I'm not sure whether or not he took over the mic or whether or not he was invited, but he certainly had a few things to say, and here's Bill.
I'm going to sit on my own with Arthur. Just like to say, ladies and gentlemen, that there's something about this hotel that I shall never, ever forget, particularly in the mornings when Arthur was going to have his breakfast, and somebody would come round, probably, well, all the crew had been out since 6 o'clock, and there was Arthur sitting down at the breakfast, and somebody come in. "Well, we've got 10 minutes to get on the coach, boys, if that's all right." He said, "Go away, go away." I'm afraid we haven't got that, so this morning, well, I have a kipper then, and I want the tail and the head left on, you mind? And you come and ask him again, you know. We've got 5 minutes after, he goes, "Go away." And just as we were about to get on the coach, then John Murray would jump up and say, "Hold on, hold on! I've only had one cup of tea and that was cold." So that was what breakfast was like. Never mind about anything else. But he sat in that corner, Arthur, always. At the bell over there. There we are. So I'm going to get up behind these very...
Have a seat next to him, Bill. Big round of applause to Bill Purley, thank you. Whilst they're taking a few photographs, I'll just say a few words. It was back in 2004 that we started the walking tours of Thetford's locations, and following the great success, we started up the museum. And when taking people round on the tours, it was very noticeable we needed a photo opportunity. And an artist's impression was created, and that went round the world and drew great media attention. The task was then to raise the money to get a statue built. 2 years down the line, we approached our target figure, and the local sculptor, Sean Hedges Quinn, who introduced you earlier, was approached to do the job. What I'd like to do now is just thank Corin Fulford and the team from the Dad's Army Museum for all their hard work in raising the funding through events and donations. I think you should note that we've had no direct funding from any councils or grant-making bodies for this project, but it's been down to the generosity of the volunteers, the Dad's Army fans from near and far, and the support of local businesses who have donated their time, money and materials to bring this project forward. There are so many individuals and businesses that we need to thank, however time does not permit me to do so. But please let them know we are very, very grateful and Hepburn has benefited greatly from their efforts. Before I ask David to join the procession, I think I'd like to also thank all those involved in the stage show, which has been a great success in the town this week. Very hard work has gone into that from both cast, crew and support staff. It's been a wonderful almost sellout every night, and thank you very much to all those who have supported us and been involved in that show. Now, I think you all agree it's a very lifelike picture of Captain Mannering, so please tell your friends to come and see him in Fairford. Thank you ever so much for turning out on this rather inclement day, and we will soon start the parade. Thank you.
What a legend.
Yes. Actually, we should have said in our intro, we're going to be talking about a couple of news items, because Dad's Army has been quite prominent in the news over the last couple of months. Two stories in particular, the first of which relate directly to the statue, and this is quite a sad story, I have to say. But rather than just describe what's happened, I think what I'll do is I'll read the opening paragraph from the report that made it onto the BBC News website. It's still there if you want to go and find it. The article is headed up, Dad's Army Captain Thetford Statue Vandal Caught. And it says, a 10-year-old boy who vandalised a Norfolk town statue of Captain Mannering from the BBC series Dad's Army has been caught by police. The life-size bronze cast of the character, played by Arthur Lowe, seated on a bench by the Anchor Hotel in Thetford, was unveiled in June. On the 4th of July, the boy, who cannot be named because of his age, was caught on CCTV repeatedly kicking the statue. I won't read the remainder of that particular story, but when you've seen this statue, you appreciate how intricate it is. Yeah. And I have to admit, it did cross my mind when I actually saw it. I thought, it's a remarkably fantastic statue.
Mm.
But you can tell they're a little bit like the glasses that are quite easy to break off. And indeed, in this particular story, that's what happened. This 10-year-old broke off the glasses and threw them into the canal. So it's a very sad story as far as I'm concerned. And it's a shame that it's happened so soon after its unveiling.
I agree. It's really awful, particularly with a sitcom like Dad's Army. It's so dear to people of all ages that some little runt would come along and deface it. It's really, really disappointing to think that's sadly a part of our youth culture these days who do something like that. Is this the only instance of something like this happening?
It's the only reported occurrence that's made it into the national news. Now, I think, unfortunately we've got to accept we live in a world where this kind of thing was anticipated and it was expected by the town council. And I think, obviously, they wanted to try and keep that kind of thing away from the public eye, because there's no, benefit, really, to dwelling on these negative elements of an otherwise very uplifting and positive story. I think they certainly had prepared for it. They've now got CCTV covering the statue, hence the reason the culprit was caught very easily.
Yeah.
And they've also got the sculptor to produce or prepare a number of parts for the statue so that they can kind of use them as and when they need to. And I know that the glasses in particular, they've commissioned, I think, about half a dozen, maybe slightly more, numbers of glasses so that they can, use them if they need to in the future.
Yeah, what a shame. A similar thing happening in Llangollen when they had the Doctor Who exhibition. Mary had to, you used to be able to walk around the TARDIS console, but then they had to barricade that off. You could only look at it because people were pulling bits off of it. And, it's alien to me, but sadly that's, the kind of people who are around. But let's hope it doesn't continue and that it's just a fad because it's new, and hopefully these things calm down. Here's fingers crossed. There is another slightly a bit more amusing, if slightly worrying news article as well about Dad's Army. And this is about a live grenade being used in a stage version by an amateur group in a new production of Dad's Army. They were doing the Deadly Attachment, and would you believe that the live grenade in the story, well, that is in fact, of course, a dud. I mean, that's the ironic thing. Yes. This particular company went that extra mile to put a bit of fear into Keith Pulteney, who was playing Corporal Jones. he apparently remained calm when he realised that the grenade in his hand was live. You can go on to BBC News site. It's a live grenade prop used in Dad's Army play. A theatre group staging a production of Dad's Army narrowly avoided the production going with a bang after using live grenades as props. And James very wittily remarked that it reminded us of something that would have happened in an episode itself.
Well, to be honest, a number of our listeners sent in emails pointing out this story. And to start with, I just didn't believe it. I thought it was some kind of Amdram group who have leaked this story to try and get a bit of publicity people could come along and see their play. But allegedly, it's absolutely, completely correct. They managed to get the prop out of someone's garage, I think, and you know, the part that actually validates the story, because it was actually true, was that the police were called and they carried out a controlled explosion.
Whoa.
But no, I agree. It certainly does sound like something that would happen within a plot of a particular episode of Dad's Army. Of course, this wouldn't be such a humorous story, I think, you know, had something gone badly wrong. But fortunately, it didn't. And it acts as a nice contrast, really, to the first news story that we brought you.
You're listening to the Dad's Army podcast with your host, James.
Okay, the actual unveiling itself, despite it being attended by so many members of the public, was actually only took a couple of hours, if that. And right. What I'm saying there is that the unveiling itself was very, very quick. But after that, they had a procession of military vehicles, and that was more like a parade, really. And I think it was supposed to be a bit of a homage, the big parade, etc., that kind right. of thing. And I'm not sure whether or not they had any. Yes, they did. They had both of Jonesy's vans there, with the one from the film and the one from the series.
How different are they out of interest?
Massively.
Yeah?
Massively, yeah. If you see the photographs of the two vans, then you can see that there's a really big difference.
Which one's the best?
Oh, in my view, definitely the one from the series.
Really?
Yeah, it's bigger. There's more attention to detail on it, I think. And I'm not quite certain whether it was actually the first van that we saw, because, of course, Jonesy's van first made an appearance in Series 3.
Yes.
And I can't quite remember what year that was broadcast.
69.
Was it 69? Because the first one was 68.
Mm. And they did two series in 69.
Wonderful. Okay, in that case then, yeah, we got to see the van used in the series prior to the one that we saw in the film.
Right. Oh, right, yeah, in which case, yeah. Because it was also the first appearance of Frank Williams as the Vicar and the first appearance of Pamela Kundell as Mrs. Fox. Speaking of which, we've got interviews with both of them.
How strange.
How what extraordinary.
A coincidence. Anyway, over to the Vicar.
This is Frank Williams and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.
Oh, well, a Dad's Army event wouldn't be a Dad's Army event if I didn't have a quick chat with my old friend Frank Williams. Hello, Frank.
Hello.
Now, this morning you saw Arthur Lowe unveiled in bronze just next to the Bell Hotel. What did you make of the statue?
I think it's absolutely magnificent. I mean, Arthur was quite grand in some ways, but I don't think in a million years he would ever have thought he would be immortalised in bronze.
Yeah.
But there he is, right in the middle of Thetford, and I think it's absolutely marvellous. The sort of combination of Jimmy and David's writing and Arthur's portrayal has made Mannering an iconic character, and it's great that he is there, immortalised forever, in Thetford, where he belongs, and it's absolutely marvellous.
You kind of answered this already, but what do you think Arthur would make of the idea of people going up to him, sitting down next to a statue of him, putting their arm around him and having their photograph taken with him?
Oh, I think he might be sort of a bit embarrassed by those. Oh, no, I don't do that sort of thing. No. But, I mean, I sat next to it. I found it quite uncanny in a way. I mean, it's so real. It's so lifelike. It is amazing. And I don't know. Arthur was not terribly good at having people sort of sitting next to him and having their photographs taken. But now he's in bronze, well, it's okay, and you can do it, and it's marvellous.
It's funny you mention how uncanny it is when you're sitting next to him, because a number of other people seem to be quite surprised at how similar the statue is to Arthur Lowe. And they kind of feel... It's a little bit like when you pass a mannequin in Marks and Spencer's, it's all dressed up, and you don't suddenly realise that it's a mannequin. And then, you know, because it's so lifelike and so real. But quite a lot of people were suddenly getting goosebumps, I think, and they didn't expect to.
Well, absolutely, yes, I accept that. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that's what I felt. I thought, you know, I don't quite believe this. Here I'm sitting next to Arthur Lowe, and he's doing his... I'm not talking to Frank. And of course, not talking to me, because he's in bronze. But that is wonderful. I mean, great, absolutely. And I think he, Jimmy and David, who created the character, deserve every bit of this, and I think it's absolutely marvellous that it's happened.
No, I do too, and I can't wait to go and get my photograph taken when perhaps there aren't so many people flocking around it.
Well, I've had my photograph taken there, Ronnie and I've had my... Ronnie Grange, who was in the stage show, had his photograph taken there. So, actually, it's absolutely marvellous that people can go and sit next to him. You can go and sit next to him, you can have your photograph taken, you can have two people sitting next to him on either side, or I don't know, I think there's room for four people, two on each side. So it's really good, you can have a group photograph with Captain Mannering himself, absolutely marvellous.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Great pleasure.
I'm joined once again by the delightful Pamela Cundell. Dad's Army event wouldn't be the same without speaking to you.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Have you had a nice time?
I've had a lovely time, and everybody has been so wonderful. And they love Dad's Army. I love Dad's Army. And it's been a privilege to work in it.
Does it ever cease to amaze you how much affection the programme still has, even 40 years on?
No, it's amazing, because when we first started, it was going to be just... another sitcom, another comedy series. And none of us thought we'd become national treasures.
Well, you certainly are. do you know, I watched your very first episode just the other week.
Oh, right.
And I thought, oh, I'll be seeing Pamela again in a week or so's time.
That's right.
I must speak to her. I just thought it's a wonderful debut. You were in a queue with lots of other actresses as well. You definitely stood out.
I had to say, have you got any sausage, Mr. Jones? A wink.
That wink, wonderful.
And that's how I came to be in Dad's Army.
Do you know, that's got to be the most unique way of winning a part
it's wonderful.
I've ever heard.
I mean, it was amazing. Just amazing.
Amazing how important the word sausages is in someone's career. So fantastic, well done. Let me ask you one other question. Mrs. Fox and Mr. Jones, are they still married?
Yes.
They are?
Yes.
Happily. Wonderful.
Very happy.
Very pleased to hear it. Pamela, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you,
it's
been a delight.
Real shame that you weren't there, Oliver.
I would have loved to have been there, and I'm very humbled that people were asking after me, which is very sweet, but no, sadly, I couldn't attend
this year. Well, I had to say on several occasions to people, you know, they say, oh, James, we listen to the podcast, where's Oliver? So that was really good. No, seriously, it was really encouraging and really great to meet each of you who did come up and say hello and say, oh, I listen to the podcast. And when I first started the podcast just over 3 years ago and we attended the very first Thetford weekend, I got up at a members' meal, you know, I was invited, I didn't just stand up and start speaking. And I said... this is the Dad's Army podcast, this is what we do, how many of you have listened to it? And about three people, out of about 80, kind of put their hand half in the air.
Right.
Whereas this time, there was far more, and people did actually come up and say, you know, we really enjoyed the show, we enjoyed the commentaries. So it was great to meet you, and quite humbling as well. And yes, the reason I was there predominantly was to do some interviews in between courses and also to open the evening as well. And I have to say that I was incredibly nervous. It was the first time that I'd interviewed anybody live, certainly in front of 200 people. Do you know, it's so much more easy to do when we're just sitting here in front of a computer,
absolutely,
Oliver.
Absolutely.
But fortunately, my first interview with Jimmy Perry, I'd made about... probably six or seven questions. I had 10 minutes to interview him in, and I thought, I'm going to get through these, and hopefully I'm not going to run out of things to say. I asked two questions, and then the 10 minutes was up.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, Here's Jimmy Perry. Hope you enjoy, well, his soliloquy, really.
Thank you.
Take a seat, Jimmy.
Oh, bless you. Sit down. Good evening, everybody. Thank you.
I think we've got two of the most comfortable seats in the house, Jimmy. What do you think?
Yes.
I think we'll stay here. Okay, first thing I wanted to ask or to talk about was the Dad's Army Captain Manuin statue that was unveiled today. Now, I know you were rather unfortunately delayed in traffic at the time, but you've seen photographs, you've seen models. I just wondered what you thought of the idea of having Arthur Lowe immortalised in Deptford for everyone to see whenever they wanted to.
Well, first of all, due to circumstances... Can you all hear me? Thank you. Due to circumstances beyond my control, we were late, and we didn't get here till about... I don't know, I'll tell you later. Somebody said, well, I like it. And we didn't get here till 2:30. It's all finished, all done. But I've seen the photographs taken today during the unveiling, and I think the statue is fantastic. Whoever did it, I don't know him, it has got...
Right in front of you, Jimmy, right in front of you.
And I tell you what is a clever thing, a brilliant thing, because it may surprise you, I used to do a bit of sculpting myself. I do anything that's artistic. Clever sod you are, very clever. Because, you see, to have real people sitting in the photographs, sitting beside a statue, they are real. You can tell they're real. Of course you can. And the statue is in the middle. He's got a faraway look in his eyes. I'm talking about the statue. And you realise that he's away on another planet. And he's become... a legend. Now, I'll tell you a little story you probably don't know. 1,000 years ago, I think it was about 10 years ago or 11 years ago, I was doing... We'd stopped doing Dad's Army here. There was a function to do, and the mayor and corporation... Have they got a mayor here?
I think they might have.
Is there a mayor here?
Just sitting opposite the sculptor.
Thank you. Thank you. Don't worry, I'm not going to say, I won't tell him.
Go on.
I was asked to speak at a very nice lunch, and it suddenly grasped me. I said to them, you have in this town a statue, Thomas Paine, of the greatest Englishman ever, the man who invented the Labour Party, and the start of caring about other people. He wrote a wonderful book, The Rights of Man. So I said at this lunch, I said, listen, that's a marvellous statue you've got here of Thomas Paine, because it is good, marvellous. And perhaps one day, this was before the council or whatever latched on to the fact that the Dad's Army was making this town famous. Anyhow, I said, when are you going to do a statue of Arthur Lowe or Captain Mannering? And I said it would be marvellous. It would lift the town up. And I spoke to a very nice woman, I say woman, lady, councillor. She said, well, you want to be a bit careful when you're talking about Thomas Paine, because there were several objections to us doing the statue of him. Some members of the committee thought it was politically wrong. Now, I ask you this. Thomas Paine, amazing man, did so much. It was wonderful. And when somebody says that to you, committee, look, it's wrong, politically wrong. I went all sullen and said, oh, really? Well, it's an idea. If you don't want to do it, don't. Well, it came to fruition. I don't know whose idea it was, and our friend down here, you didn't know we had this trouble, did you? They had this trouble. I didn't. I just told them, get it done, get a statue. Because 5 or 6 years ago, Roy Hudd and I and a lot of others raised the money to have a statue of the great Max Miller on the front at Brighton. Now, some of you younger people may not know who Max Miller was. Max Miller was perhaps the greatest stand-up comedian this country ever produced. Maxie was born at Brighton and lived there for years and owned half the town. He wasn't very generous. But Max Miller was the great star, the huge star. And so Roy Hudd and I, in conjunction with the Max Miller Appreciation Society, got the ball rolling. And they now have a life-size statue of Maxie. That's nice, Maxie was his catchphrase, on the front. Well, I think they've moved it, actually, at Brighton. And that's where all this idea of statues, I thought, is more. Why do we have to have statues of politicians, old generals, clergymen, and why can't we have statues of actors, comedians, performers? How do you feel about that? People want to laugh. And people say to me, I get letters from all over the world, Jimmy, thanks for making us laugh. And I'm very proud. I'm going to tell you a little story. Have I used my timer?
No, it's making it very easy for me. Please carry on. Well, very interesting.
Well, just shut up. I'll do it.
Okay.
When I was a young actor, and that's going back a long, long time, I was in a play in a theatre, and I shared a dressing room with a very old actor. And this, I was about 24. Very old actor. His name was Harold Wilkinson. He'd never become famous. He'd never become a star. He was a jobbing actor, £12 a week. And all he had lunchtime were fish paste sandwiches, which he brought from Brixton on the train. And I arrived at the theatre about 2 o'clock one afternoon. It was a beautiful summer's day. And it was an OAPs. In those days, they were called old age pensioners. I'm one myself now. And I said to the actor, his name was Harold Wilkinson, I said, Wilkie, I don't want to do that show this afternoon. All those old people out there. And he looked at me, the tired old face in the mirror, years of disappointment, years of failure. He said, now, you listen to me, son, and listen carefully. Out there this afternoon, there's going to be about 400 old people. They'll have worries. They've lost dear ones. They haven't any money. Every day they wake up to another worry. And this afternoon, son, they've come here for you to make them laugh and forget their problems and forget all the unpleasantness in their life. And that's your trade, son. That's what you do. Your trade is to make people laugh. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't say I'm an artist. My trade, his trade is doing sculptures. And I'm very proud of that fact. And that has been my life, along with my partnership with my dear friend. I'm talking to you, David. Hello. We have a very marvellous relationship, and we've done some stuff, haven't we, Dave? Done some stuff together. And I'm very proud that somebody said to me, that's your trade. Make people laugh. Make them forget their troubles. And that is always makes me full of pride, because it's there. And I get letters from it all over the place. Now, I've run out of stuff now. What more do you want to know?
Okay. Well, that's all we've got time for. No, I have got a couple of questions.
Yes.
There's one question that I must ask you, because I've been meaning to ask you this for as long as I've wanted to interview you. Now, during the time when you were writing Dad's Army with David, there must have been the odd occasion when you thought, oh, we could do this, or we could do that. And for one reason or another, for timing, or perhaps you decided not to pursue it, you decided not to use that particular storyline. Could you tell us about any episodes that you and David thought about that never actually made it to our screens?
Well, David and I wrote the scripts, and that was it. No actors interfered, did they, David? And if they tried to interfere, we told... And David, very good, he said, I'll think about it, and he'd walk away. And I said, I'll think about it as well, and I'd walk away. If you're lucky to be in a position like we were, you have control. And the sad thing is, there's plenty of clever comedy writers, and suddenly they're faced, maybe, with actors who don't understand, don't want to do it. I'll tell you one story. Anybody here remember the great Peggy Mount? Yes. Well, yes, thank you. She was a wonderful woman. And Bill Ward, who ran ATV Studios, phoned me up. He said, Jim, I'm looking for a vehicle for Peggy Mount and Hugh Lloyd. He said, what I want is a battle axe of a wife and a timid husband, and they're both madly in love with each other. Anyhow, I wrote the script, and I have to tell you this, one of the few times I just wrote for money. I never do it again. I avoid it. If the money, success, the money comes in, very good. So we start to record the show. It was called a lot... Wait a minute, here's a title. If I thought of some titles, I don't do good titles. Lollipop Loves Mr. Mole. Now, if you were thinking of anything worse... I cringe, but I don't mind. I stand before you, pilloried. And the whole idea was that she was a battle axe, and they were crazily in love. So we start rehearsing. And I said to the director, what's the matter with her? She's playing it like Penelope Keith. In fact, she seems to be doing an impersonation of Penelope Keith. I said, are you going to tell her or shall I? That's good, David. You've had that before, haven't you? You're going to tell her or am I? Anyhow, I said, Peggy, I wrote this part for a battle axe with a heart of gold. You're playing it rather low. She said, I'm not doing those sort of parts anymore. I said, beg your pardon? I said, I've written six scripts. She said, no, I don't want to do that. And she said, I fancy a part that they would have asked Penelope Keith to do. Soft and kind. So I said to the producer, listen, get the engine running. We're in dead trouble here. And that was the time I learnt my lesson. Don't encourage actors to have their own way. And believe you me, I battled through 13 scripts, fighting all the time to get her to play the part for reality. And that's the lesson I've learned. Now, I've run out of stuff. I want to eat my dinner. I'm hungry.
That's perfect timing. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jimmy Carey.
I finished. Yeah. Don't start eating. Wait until I start.
Well, how about that? An exclusive interview with Mr. Rockcliffe and Jimmy Perry. the co-creator and writer of Dad's Army. Well, speaking of writers, we've now got another wonderful interview that James conducted, this time with the two writers of the radio versions of Dad's Army, Michael Knowles and Howard Snowd, both of whom, of course, were affiliated with the television series. Howard directed several episodes and was a production manager of four series. Michael Knowles playing Captain Cutts, I believe. His name changed a couple of times, but I think Captain Cutts was the character name he had the most. And so here they are. Here's James interviewing them, and we hope you enjoy.
Am I near enough?
How's that? Do you want to have a sound test?
One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three. Can you hear me?
No, you can't. It's not on.
Not on.
No, that doesn't help, does it?
How about that? How's that? How's that? One, two, three, four, five.
Yes, sir. Do you know, it looks remarkably good. You're sitting very, very close together there.
We've all known each other a long time.
Well,
not that close.
You go back a long way. Yes. Now, when I knew I was going to be interviewing the pair of you, I was thinking, well, there are so many different aspects of your careers that I could just sit and talk to you about for ages. And then Tony Pritchard told me I've got 10 minutes with you, so we're going to have to go really quick.
Right.
Okay, I'd like to focus on the radio adaptions that the pair of you are responsible for, really. And from a personal point of view, that's how I really got into Dad's Army. I always enjoyed the TV episodes, but it was the radio versions that I really, really enjoyed. So I listened to them as I went to sleep at night. So
they sent you to sleep? Then.
They sent me to sleep, yeah, there we go. It was supposed to be a compliment, didn't really work, but never mind. Yeah, I never got to hear the ending. Well, first thing I'd like to ask, because it was a good few years after Dad's Army first broadcast on TV, that the idea of a radio series came up. How did that actually come about? Michael, perhaps?
I'm trying to think.
BBC hierarchy, isn't it?
I suppose so, yes.
They latched onto it because they thought, well, this is a successful television. We could probably, would it become a successful radio?
And at that time, a lot of television was being done on radio as well. Doing the radio version of the television, yeah.
How did the pair of you actually get involved? How did you get together to start writing these adaptions?
Well, David and Jimmy were very busy writing the television series, and I think it was Jimmy's idea that you and I, wasn't it?
We all had the same agency.
Yeah.
Which is it's a bit of nepotism in there. So,
that it might be a good idea if Michael and I got together and had a go at it. So we actually met up, didn't we?
Yeah.
At the television centre and outside, I remember that particular day, do you?
Yes, I did. The end of off. Yeah.
And it took off from there, really.
We just wrote the pilot and then they listened to it and then said, OK, you can carry on.
And they liked it enormously. Yeah. And then they decided to do the one series, and as soon as they'd done that, they thought, this is going to work. So they asked us for, 20 episodes the next time? 20 episodes. We thought, what? How much? 20?
Sure. Well, in total, you adapted 67
episodes. So I believe, yes.
Yeah, 67 episodes, yeah.
Was there a particular process of selecting those 67?
Certainly, yes, because it's so visual, Dad's Army. So we had to. Certain episodes you couldn't possibly do.
When we started off, we used to skip that episode because we thought, we had no idea they were going to eventually ask us to do 67. You see what I'm getting at? So we used to skip over episodes that were particularly visual. Oh, no, we won't do that one. We'll move on and on. But, of course, then came a time when, because they wanted 67, we had to go back a pace and look at some of those that we'd originally given up on and redo them in such a way that it would work for radio. But they were really the tricky ones, weren't they?
Yeah, they really were.
Well, there were several scenes in a lot of the episodes that you did adapt that were very visual. Something like Time on My Hands at the end is completely visual. You have Jones at the top of the clock. How do you sit down and decide how to turn those visual gags into dialogue?
Well, with something as visual as that, you can't possibly, so you have to write something else.
Yeah. Right.
Really.
Okay. You have to write something else, a description of what's going on.
Did you have complete license to do that, where you think this simply won't work?
Yes, we did. David and Jimmy were wonderful. They're very good.
Very happy about it.
So you had more or less free rein on how you interpreted these.
Well, I think we wouldn't take liberties.
No.
It was very much within the character. And also, there was a certain cost thing, because certainly at the beginning, wasn't it? We weren't allowed to use, because it cost too much, all the cast in each episode.
Right, okay.
So we had to eliminate certain characters out of it. And some of their lines had to go to other characters. It all became very complicated.
Then when it was a success, the whole cast came in.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because I think my next point is about casting. And, of course, you've got several actors playing the character of Walker including James May. Did you have any say in who got cast there? I mean, how influential?
No, I don't think we did, actually. No, I think just the radio producer, John Dias, in those days, he did it,
It was Graham Stark and then...
Graham Stark, Larry Martin. Was there one other as well?
No.
Was it just the three?
Just
the three, including James Beck. But, of course, you had Pearl Hackney as well. Playing Mrs.
Oh, she was great.
Molly Sugden as well, I think, played...
Crumbs. Yes, you reminded me. Yes, you actually
A long time
reminded.
Ago.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Talking about developing some of the characters, because almost I think when you try and do something in a new forum, you have to try and draw out some of the main points of a particular character. And I think the characters on the radio series are very, very defined.
Yes.
Was that partly what inspired you to go off and write the sequel, It Sticks at Half a Mile? Because there's clear character development for Hodges there and for Pike. Yeah. What was that like, writing... life after Dad's Army for those two characters?
It was just an idea that we had together. Yeah. I mean, it was quite tricky to do, but we thought it might be an idea to continue it from Bill's character on it, and it did work,
Well, of course, Arthur was still alive, wasn't he?
Yes.
We're going to carry on with that.
Yeah.
So we went through quite a transmogrification, really, because we had Arthur and then...
Yeah.
Who else came in? Different stages.
Yeah. Did we do that before? The pilot we did for television. Richard Wilson.
That was right. Richard Wilson and Ian.
It was in it originally. I can't remember.
And Roy Kinnear.
Was it?
We're getting confused here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
But it's
quite complex. So many different people came in, so many different versions of it before it ended up.
And then when we eventually put it to the BBC to do it, they turned it down. Mm-hmm. And so we then went and did it on
ITV.
Well, it's something that's relatively new to me. I've only revisited or found It Sticks Out recently. Had the majority of the audience, have you listened to It Sticks Out Half a Mile?
One man.
There's a few.
Oh, two.
Well, it is an official sequel to Dad's Army, and it is very worthwhile having a listen to. So
the interesting thing from that came another series called High and Dry, which is ITV wanted to do that.
Mm.
And the BBC didn't want to do it, and so they said, all right, well, ITV... The ITV said they were interested.
Well, you made the pilot, didn't you?
Yeah, I made a pilot, the ITV said they were interested. So I went to the BBC and said, look, this is a bit difficult. Here I am working with the BBC, producer director for you for many years, written this series, but you don't want to do it. ITV has said they'd be interested. Where does that leave me? And they said, well, okay. So that was all right, so I got rung up by the director general, who said, we don't want you to write it under your name, Harry. And then, so I said, all right, fine.
We had Nom de Plume, didn't we?
Yeah, we had Nom de Plume. Yeah. So he wrote it. But then, of course, there was this thing. It was all set about on a pier. Mm. And if anything, when I did the pilot, I mean, there was a lot of material that was actually shot on location. Because if you're trying to establish a pier, unless you're actually in a room on the pier, an amusement room or something, that's one thing. But most people associate piers with seeing the sea outside and seagulls and wind and all that sort of thing. That's what happens on a pier,
Traditional.
Yeah, traditional. Mm. And when we got to... When I went up there, we used to go up there weekly. I was invited up there to see the recording one. This was being done in a studio against a sort of backdrop and that was,
It was like Toy Town.
It was absolutely ridiculous. It absolutely didn't work at all. There was no atmosphere at all on it. And in those days, there was a programme called... what was that programme that used to criticise?
In the Deep End.
No, I've forgotten what it's called now, but there was a regular programme once a week that discussed, my wife probably remember the name. Open Air, that's what it
Open
was.
Open Air.
Thank you, Dean. Open Air. And they had a lot of complaints of people that said, why are we looking at this? I mean, this is supposed to be outside and whatnot. It's stuck in a studio. And frankly, it's not the least bit realistic. Mm. So Open Air got in touch with Richard Wilson, and said, would he come in And then Richard Wilson said, well, only if Harold Snow comes in. So the two of us went and did this programme about open air and try and got these questions answered, you know. But it was very difficult, a very funny way of of doing as something set outside the whole thing in the studio. You know?
No, I can imagine.
It looks like a children's television thing, you know what I mean? Yeah.
It sounds like a fascinating
toy
experience.
Town.
Yes.
Yeah,
toy and
town, yeah.
It's clear, I mean, Dad's Army seems to be, it's got a history of collaborations with David and Jimmy and yourself for the radio plays. How good is it actually forming that relationship with someone who you can just bounce off over a long period of time and come up with, you know, really good ideas? Is it much easier than writing on your own?
Oh, crumbs, it must be, yes.
Yes.
It's very lonely, obviously, I imagine. I've never done it.
But in fairness, we did in a way, didn't we? Because when we used to do Dad's Army, we used to take alternate episodes.
Yeah.
And Michael would look at one and start to put it together, and I'd look at another and put it together.
Never comes again.
And then we'd meet up, either alternately, usually at my place or at your place, and then we'd go over what we'd written and swap notes with each other and whatnot. And
that's how it works. A lot of writers work.
It worked very well indeed.
Yeah. It sounds like great fun as well.
Yeah, it was hard work actually, but it was great fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Michael and Harold, thank you very much indeed for spending just a few moments speaking to me. As I said, I'd love to speak to you both about other aspects of your career, and perhaps we can someday.
Yep. But
in the meantime, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. I have to say, I really enjoyed interviewing both Harold and Michael, and it was a real shame that I only got the 10 minutes, to be honest with you, because, you know, you can focus on either of those two's association with Dad's Army, and as you said on the lead-in, Michael's been involved in several different episodes. I could have spoken to him for half an hour just about his experiences acting in Dad's Army.
Very much similarly,
the episodes that Harold directed, you know, he also was responsible for finding Stanta, which was the location, the MOD location that they used for filming.
Yeah.
He was production manager. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic experience speaking to both Harold and Michael. And I'm pleased to say, not making any great promises at this stage, obviously, because these things have a habit of all going wrong, but Harold agreed to a slightly lengthier, in-depth interview. So hopefully we'll get around to carrying that out at some point in the near future. Okay, the last interview that we're going to bring you for this podcast is an interview that I'd had after a couple of brandies, once again with Stuart Wright. Now, Stuart, as Oliver correctly said earlier on in the show, is a bit of an ambassador of Dad's Army, and he's continually coming up with new ideas on how to promote Thetford using Dad's Army, and of course raise the profile of Dad's Army as well. And he's achieved both very, very well, principally through the successful statue initiative. And as you'll find out, you'll soon be able to go to Thetford and have a bun and a cup of tea in the Marigold Tea Rooms.
Wow, now this I've got to hear.
I have the great honour of being joined once again by Stuart Wright. Stuart, it's been 3 years since we spoke about your vision for the Captain Mannering statue, and now we have it.
We do indeed, and it's a great honour to have my dream brought to life. It's been 2 years of real hard work by the members of the volunteers of the museum. We've had no public funding whatsoever for this, and it's very much the efforts that the local people and the local businesses have put to get it there. And I think the vibes today from the people who have seen the statue are that it is Arthur Lowe to a T. And what I've said to people is we're not celebrating Arthur Lowe, it's the whole of Dad's Army. In Mark Stepper's association with Dad's Army, and will be there for the years to come.
Absolutely brilliant. Have you had your photograph taken with it yet?
I've not sat down next to him yet. I've been many hours this week around the statue with the turf being relaid and the brickwork. We're very fortunate that H.G. Matthews down in Buckinghamshire often supply the brickwork, so I was there with me graph paper doing the design for the arrowhead, which actually came to fruition, and we've had people there tending the grass and tending the flowers all around it, and it's really chuffed that today is out. And obviously the stage show we've had this week in town has been a real buzz leading up to today.
I've been coming to Thetford for the last seven, eight, 9 years, and I can really feel the atmosphere now. This weekend has just been slightly different. It's always exciting coming to Thetford and seeing the locations, but now with the buzz of having this statue unveiled and the way it's been done as well, you mentioned the arrowhead there, that just so the listeners understand, it's a kind of, it's the arrow, isn't it, of the title sequence.
The opening titles is the red sinuous arrow coming to the Union Jack arrowhead, and Captain Mannering situated right in the centre of that arrowhead, and with the backdrop of the town bridge situated between the Bell and the Anchor Hotels, which is the ideal location.
Absolutely.
I'd have to have words with Bill, who suggested it should be in the Bell grounds, but it's took me 2 years to get it where it is. I'm not moving at the moment.
Do you know, good old Mr. Pertwee, I mean, he would have suggested that you put it somewhere different, wherever you laid it, but it's clearly a success. I was there for about half an hour this afternoon just watching people go up, look at it, say, wow, this is the spitting image of Arthur Lowe. In fact, the most interesting question that I heard people ask was, right, that's one, what about the other six?
We have had a number of people say, where are we going to get the rest of them?
So you could have the platoon dotted around Thetford.
I think our next project will probably be the Marigold Tea Rooms in the Dad's Army Museum.
Oh, brilliant.
We've got the room earmarked now, and it's very much getting some money. We've got a 10-year lease from the Town Council for our use of the building there, and that includes this room, which is not open to the public at the moment, but will be our Marigold Tea Rooms.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I look very, very much forward to going to have a scone there. Yeah. I think that would be fantastic. Stuart, many congratulations on your achievement. It's you hear many, many schemes talked about, but very few actually come to fruition, so many congratulations.
But I just must thank the efforts of all our team involved with the Thetford Museum, because it's not one person. It was an idea, and these people have brought it to fruition. It is really good. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stuart.
Well, we really hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Well done to James for bagging so many wonderful interviews of the cast and crew of Dad's Army. I'm very jealous that I wasn't there, but I'm very pleased to have heard of the results. And we really hope you've enjoyed. And next time we'll be going through all of your fantastic feedback. We've been receiving many emails. And of course, don't stop there. You can email us at james@dadsarmypodcast.com or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter. It's twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/Oliver Crocker. I must say, I had a very nice tweet the other day from a girl in a bikini, whether that's a Dad's Army podcast listener, I'm not really sure. Please do keep in touch with us. We really love getting your feedback and hearing from you all, and hopefully you'll be hearing our thoughts on your feedback of the next episode.
Absolutely, and do keep the feedback coming in. We've received an absolute mountain once again, so we're going to have a reasonably long recording session. Oliver and I will have to get at least 2 bottles of wine to get us through that recording. But do please keep sending in your messages. We'll also announce the winner of the competition in the next podcast. Now, I know we've said that for the last couple of podcast, but it just didn't seem right to do it as part of the coverage of the Dad's Army weekend, so we'll do our best to try and get a celebrity involved in the announcements as well.
Oh yeah, we want to make a fuss about it.
Yeah. So we will definitely draw that competition, and remember, you stand a chance of winning the entire set of Dad's Army DVDs that have been released by the BBC. Anyway, we'll play out with that competition once again. So all you have to do is identify the episodes. There are 11 episodes in total. And email your entry to james@dadsarmypodcast.com. And I really think that is it for now, Oliver.
Yes, it's been a pleasure, my friend, and we hope you've enjoyed listening. Good luck with the competition, and see you next time.
Bye for now.
Who do you think you...
One of you is a murderer. Very soon, I shall reveal the identity.
Well, can we fall out and have a bit of a smoke while we're waiting in, Sarge?
No, I'd rather you didn't, if you don't mind.
Now, Corporal Jones, you see that word? Yes, sir. Have you done that?
Do you mean recently, sir?
Mensch, guck mal die Zeit. Typisch britische Untuchtigkeit. Es sind nun schon 10 Minuten her, seit wir abgeschossen worden sind. Und keiner hat uns gefangen genommen.
Kein Wunder, Sie verlieren den Krieg.
Ja, ja, natürlich. Sch, was ist das?
Just a minute, Captain Mannering. Yon drum holds 50 rounds. It will go on longer. Something like...
God, Mannering, you can hit pretty low when it suits you.
Sergeant Wilson, take your trousers off.
Tiddlypot.
What is it?
Who do you think?
I dreamt of the marble horse
with a little otoil and a feather. And when I awoke, I found it no joke. He was tanning, but...
Get out of here.
Ready with his gun, show who...
To Britain's Home Guard.
To Britain's Home Guard.
It won't work, Walker.